Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Happy Wednesday morning to you. It is not the last day of February. It's the next to last day of February. It's a leap year. Tomorrow's February 29th, but it's 28th today. I am Andy Griffin. I'm live. I'm up in Orem, Utah. I've been covering high school state 4A basketball playoffs. And in studio, Stockton is hosting Zach Renstrom. Hi, Zach. How are you today?
Good. It's good to be here.
Thanks for coming on. Zach, of course, is the president of the Washington County Water Conservancy District. And as we always like to say, Zach, if you have enough water, you got lots of problems. If you don't have enough water, you got one problem, but it's a big one.
It is a big one that you can only go a few days without.
Thank you for keeping an eye on that for us. We're going to spend just a second on some alternatives to grass. And I know maybe on a future show, Zach, we can talk more in depth about some of the grass alternatives. I know you guys are offering all kinds of rebates for pulling your grass out, but what you don't want people to do, and I know you've said this before, but we'll remind them, we don't want people to just pull your grass out and pour cement.
Exactly, or just pull out your cement and just put rocks. We really want a landscape conversion. We want people to remove a plant material that requires a lot of water and replace that with, you know, desert-friendly plants. And we have some beautiful plants that are very green and lush, and that's what we want people to do.
I was going to ask you, is there a favorite of yours, a more desert-friendly plant that you really like, one of your favorites?
So if you go up to our desert garden, which is just right up there by Sugarloaf, or some people refer to it as the Dixie Rock, we have that desert garden up there. And right now things are starting to bloom, and it's just really quite remarkable. And so there's a couple of trees that I like the shade of the trees. And so there's a couple of shade trees we have up there that's quite nice. But right now with the spring coming on, it really is a remarkable place to go up there and just walk around and see everything in bloom. And everything in that garden is desert friendly, easy to maintain for most parts. We have little things that you can scan with your phone, and it pulls up all the information on the plant, and so you can learn more about it. And yeah, if somebody's looking at removing their grass and replacing it with that, that would be the first place I'd recommend them to go, is up to that garden.
You know, it's funny, sometimes when you're a resident of a place that has a great, almost tourist-type thing like the Desert Garden, the Sugarloaf, you tend to not go there when you live there because, that's where all the tourists go. But, if you can go there on a day like today, a weekday where there's not a lot of tourists around and check it out, it's a great time to go and stop by and check out the Desert Garden. And that's put together by our friends over there at the Water Conservancy District. Zach, let's talk reservoirs for a couple of minutes. Our old friend Ron Thompson was instrumental in getting Quail Creek and in Sand Hollow, and you were part of that as well, but it's not enough. What are we looking at now?
So right now, we're actually in the process of constructing another reservoir, and so Chief Toka Reservoir is being constructed. If you drive up I-15 and right before you get to the Anderson Junction exit heading north, if you look over to your right, in the little tiny valley right there, you can see some very heavy equipment. We're right now preparing the foundation of the dam and doing some trenching. So we're building new reservoirs, and we have multiple more coming online, hopefully. We're working quite extensively right now on two reservoirs on the west side of the county. One is called Dry Wash, which is located in Ivins, and the other one is called Graveyard, which is near Santa Clara City. And hopefully one of those will start construction here within the next year, is our hope. If we can get all the federal permits, then we'll start construction on one of those right away.
I want to talk a little bit about reservoirs. I the common thing a lot of people like to say is, oh, they're just building reservoirs so we can build more. And that's really kind of a backwards logic. Zach, people are going to build more anyway. In fact, there is a housing shortage in Washington County and in the United States of America. It's not you're getting more water so that people can build more. It's that people are building more, so we've got to try to keep up with the water.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. As a water district, we simply respond to growth. We don't go out there and promote growth. We don't encourage growth, or we don't discourage it either. We just simply respond to it. And we follow what our cities do. And so our cities have gone out and entitled land. And, you know, like you said, we do have this housing issue here in Washington County. And so we're just simply responding to what the cities have authorized to be built already.
The last figure I read that projected a need for 30,000 houses to be built between 2020 and 2030. And the projected right now schedule we're on is for 22,000 houses to be built in that same time. So we're going to end up 8,000 houses short of what really we need. And, of course, when you hear those numbers, Zach, you're like, okay, that's a lot of houses. Where are we going to get all the water for these guys? And, of course, you can rely on the river, but ultimately you've got to have one of those terms you like to use, redundancy, which – if you, you know, regular life redundancy can be a bad thing. Always telling me that story again. Redundancy when it comes to water is a whole different animal.
Yeah, and, you know, fortunately we have good technology now that we have options that they didn't have, you know, 50, even 40 years ago. And so, you know, we're not getting any new water. So we just have to be more creative, for lack of a better word, to how we use our water. And so, you know, we store that water in reservoirs, so we try to capture the spring runoff what we can. And now we're looking at taking reuse water and adding that into the mix. And so we have to go out there and look for everything and make sure that the water that we do have and we are using, that we're really good stewards with what we have.
Now, dry wash has been in the news lately. I don't know if you want to talk about what that's all about and what that could potentially mean.
Yeah, so dry wash and graveyard. There was the NEPA documents or the environmental studies that were done on that over 20 years ago, and it was part of settling some water rights with the Shavuot Reservation. And so part of that whole process, they did, you know, the environmentalist analysis and the analysis of if we even needed the reservoirs. And so that was all decided 20 years ago that, yes, we need two reservoirs on that side of the county, and we need them to be a certain size. And they identified dry wash and graveyard. Dry wash is located a little bit, well, it's near Kianta. And so recently there has been a lot of public discussion out there about dry wash. There's certain people that have moved there since the 20 years has been up or longer, and they have a lot of questions about dry wash and how it would operate. And we're glad to answer any of those questions. In joint with the city of Ivins, we had a public open meeting. I believe they call it a talkabout, where we brought in our engineers and our experts and allowed people to ask questions and comments. I know they're going to do, the city council is going to do some more question and answering about that. But it really comes down to this, is Ivins City has laid out a lot of growth plans. You know, they have that huge new desert resort going out there.
Black Desert.
It requires a lot of water. And so we do have a plan to deal with that. But to deal with that water and to make sure Ivins has the water it needs, we have to build infrastructure, and that's a reservoir. And so that's kind of the question, is some neighbors in the area, they do not want a reservoir near them, even though they do have Ivins reservoir near them, but they don't want another one. But it kind of comes back. It's like, well, then, but that's how we get water to Ivins, is by building reservoirs and working with it. And so we're just now in the process of making sure that we're answering everybody's questions and help people understand the need for it. And so we'll continue to work with the city on that. But yeah, there's been a lot of news about that lately.
Are they unhappy because of the size of the reservoir, because of the location, because it's going to create traffic? I guess I'm trying to wrap my brain around why they would not want it there.
Well, there's a lot of different opinions out there. Some people, they don't want any recreation on it. Some people are very opposed to that. Some people are concerned how, you know, it'll just operate, because, you know, when it's full, and then during the summertime, it'll go down, so we'll have some exposed beaches, and so there's some concerns there. kind of the whatever question you could ever imagine coming up, people have, you know, there is questions about, is it a safe location to build a reservoir? Like, if you build a reservoir, will there be soil movement, or just will the structure itself will be safe? And so we've answered questions like that. And so I think a lot of the questions that are coming are, the main questions is, people just simply don't want economic development. They're just like, you know, hey, we're okay if the cities don't issue any more building permits. I think that's a general theme that I hear quite a bit. And then some people out there are very concerned about how, like with dust, when the reservoir's kind of lower and we do have some exposed beaches, how will that affect things out there? And we just tell them, well, it'll be very similar to what Ivan's Reservoir is doing. Ivan's Reservoir has been there for over 100 years, and people have moved in around it. We had a developer that built a hotel right next to Ivan's Reservoir, and they seem to be operating just fine. And so this reservoir will be operating the exact same as our other reservoirs in the county.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because I know up in northern Utah, a lot of folks with the, you know, with the Great Salt Lake getting shrinking, we're worried about the dust from the Great Salt Lake and how it would affect their way of life. And I guess similar concerns. And if we hit another drought area, or maybe like you said, when it just gets really hot in mid-July or August.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, that's one of those things that we talk to people about. The city council's going to be weighing in heavily on it. But really kind of comes back to that thing is, I what's interesting is we're doing the exact same thing with Chief Toka Reservoir, and property values and people are kind of flocking towards Chief Toka and thinking, well, wow, once that is built, it's going to be this amazing amenity, and it's going to have the same fluctuation. Yeah. And so it's kind of interesting. It'll be, you know, Chief Toka will have reuse water in it, just like dry wash will have it. And it's kind of interesting to see public clamor and see how things are kind of stirred up. And there's just a lot of legitimate questions I think is fair for people to ask. And I'm happy to answer those and go out to these public events and talk to people. And we'll continue to do that. And I mean, I know, and, you know, Andy, I know we've joked about it. If at the water district, if I buy black pins, people are going to complain I don't buy blue pins. And if I buy blue pins, people complain I don't buy black. So I know I won't be able to satisfy everybody. I just won't. But I think it is very fair for the public to ask questions and us to answer that and to get out the best information and all the information we have. We want to be very transparent and let people know what's going on.
Has there come an issue, you mentioned dealing with the public, has there come an issue during your tenure where people just don't understand, they don't maybe get what's going on? It's been frustrating to you that you've been like, look, no, this is really what it is, and people don't understand that, or have you been able to pretty much clear everything up?
No, it is interesting every once in a while to hear questions come in. I know, this was right when I got on, like 5 years ago. There's a gentleman that called me up, and he was just so upset, and I couldn't tell. I mean, it took like 5 minutes to figure out what's going on, and he was really upset because with fluorination in the water. And after about 10 minutes, I finally told him, I was like, well, in Washington County, we don't add fluorination to the water. And he was just silent for a minute. And he said, yes, you do. And I says, no, we don't. He says, yes, you do. Even though I can tell you we do not add fluorination to the water, I could not convince this guy for the life of me that we don't add it. And I says, well, you know, at the time I was like, hey, I'll take you to the water treatment plant and walk you around, and you can see there's no like canisters of fluorination out there. And I could never convince him, and I never heard back from him again. But yeah, that was one that kind of stuck out in my head, that no matter what I said, no matter what I could show him, he would never ever believe that we don't fluorinate our water here.
Sometimes you get it in your head and you're thinking, that's, you know, I read about this online and I got a complaint about it. It turned out to be an invalid complaint.
For the most part, I think our county is excellent. And the people in Washington County are amazing people. And that's one of the reasons why I enjoy living here. And one of the reasons why I chose to live here is because the people are really good. And a lot of times when we sit down with people and we explain things, I would say the vast majority, after they sit down and have their questions answered, they're really good. And they understand that we don't have some hidden agenda. We don't have some secret agenda. Like, I'm not trying to do some secret thing with dry wash or do anything devious. Like, I personally don't own any land in that area. None of my staff owns land in that area. It simply is, we're just trying to get water to Ivins. I mean, that it's as simple as that. That's our goal. And that's what we'll continue to do, and is to provide water to the cities when they need it. And that's our agenda. It's as simple as that. So
now, I have a question for you about Chief Toker Reservoir. So sure. I think it's a fantastic name, honoring a great Indian leader from back in the day. But I have talked to, I'll bet, 10 different people about that reservoir, and they all call it the Tokerville Reservoir. Is the name not going to stick, Chief Toker Reservoir? Is it just a matter of education? Does it really even matter? I guess that's my question.
No, it's kind of gone back and forth. I mean, there was never an official name to it. Like, there was never a specific, this is the name. So it's kind of gone back from naming it after the city, after just Toker. But the Shivwits band came to us and specifically made a formal request to make it Chief Toker. And also, once the reservoir is built, we're going to put up like a little a plaque talking about Chief Toker. And so that's why it's never really been settled until just recently to Chief Toker. And that's why it's kind of been bouncing around a little bit.
Maybe you could explain a little more, even though we talked about it in the past on this show, to people about why that reservoir there. And the reason I kind of bring it up is I came up here to northern Utah a couple days ago and drove by the old Ash Creek Reservoir, and there is water in it right now, but there's also a lot of swampy, mucky, muddy spots and stuff. And maybe you can explain that whole process.
Yeah. So right now, with most of our water systems now, the simple stuff has been done. And so we have to do much more complex things. So right now there's a really good spring right there in Tokerville, and so it's a culinary grade spring where it really just comes out. We add just a touch of chlorine to make sure there's no bacteria that can grow in the pipes, and you can drink it. It's actually really cheap water to utilize. What's going on right now is the vast majority of that water is being used for irrigation. And so if you go out to Tokerville right now and you look at all those fields, that's using that really good, high-quality water. And so what we're going to do is we're going to do a swap. And so we're going to take that spring and convert it to 100% drinking water. And to make up that water to the people that are farming out there, we're building the reservoir. And so those farms now will be using water out of the reservoir, and we're going to make that swap happen. And so the question is, where's the water coming to fill that reservoir? And it's really going to come from a couple locations. Is, first of all, at the top of Black Ridge, we have, Ash Creek Reservoir. And that was never designed to be a reservoir. What happened is they built I-15 and kind of created a reservoir when they filled it in. And so it wasn't designed properly. It wasn't a good location. And so that reservoir leaks like a sieve. And, they did a lot of ideas on trying to figure out how the things to do with that reservoir, but it just has never worked well because of that. So we're going to take that water and bring it down to a geological formation that's a lot better. It's actually closer to the population that will be able to hold that water. Then we do have a couple pipelines going up some of the side canyons, Wet Sandy? Is it Sandy? Something Sandy. We have a pipeline going up and catching some of the water that's coming down off of Pine Mountain. And then the other thing on Chief Toker is we're actually going to start treating sewer water and start pumping that up there. And so right now, Ash Creek Special Service District, which handles the sewer over there with Toker, Leverkin, and Hurricane, they're building a treatment plant right there in Confluence Park, and they're going to treat the water to that really high level, and then we're going to pump it up to the reservoir. And so that's where the water is going to come to fill that reservoir. And so we'll have a lot more drinking water in that area, but we're still providing those farmers out there the water that they need so they can continue to farm.
What is your timeline then on Tokerville? Obviously, construction is underway. Chief Toker Reservoir, I should say. Construction is underway. How close are we? How long is this going to take? And when do you plan on it being completed?
So it probably won't be completed for at least another year, year and a half. And then once everything is completed, we'll bring the water into it very slowly. when there's a new reservoir, you just don't quickly fill it. You raise it for a little bit, and then you just let it sit for a while, and you raise it a little bit and let it sit there. And so at full operation, it probably won't even come online for probably about 3 or 4 years. But the dam itself hopefully will be finished in about a year, year and a half.
It's interesting to me, as you mentioned, people tend to want to build. Property values go up. People tend to want to build. I mean, there are subdivisions planned and whole developments planned around there being a reservoir there in Tokerville. I don't know. I guess you would call that unintended consequences or just something that happens. But it seems to be, you know, you build a reservoir, a recreation area, and people want to be around it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at Sand Hollow. I was talking to some individuals that are doing some developments out by Sand Hollow Reservoir, and they say the biggest selling point is the location near Sand Hollow Reservoir. And so wherever we build these, you know, wherever there's reservoirs, there's people kind of flock to them. And I understand, I mean, I recreate quite heavily on reservoirs, and it's just kind of a great place to go. And especially in the desert, like wherever there's water in the desert, that's where life goes. Sometimes direct race.
The proverbial oasis, right?
Yeah. And so we're kind of creating our own little oasis where there wasn't one before.
Very cool. We're talking with Zach Renstrom, the president of the Washington County Water Conservancy District, today on the Andy Griffin Show. We're going to take a time out, Zach, and when we come back, we'll talk about more about reservoirs, also about snowpack. Is the drought over? That's a great question to ask, but I know Zach has an answer that isn't necessarily one everyone wants to hear. That and more on the Andy Griffin Show when we come back after this break.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy Griffin. I'm in a hotel room. I hope I'm not waking up our neighbors here, but in Orem, Utah. I've been up at the state basketball championship. Sad news, Silk Canyon boys lost. They will not play for the championship. So they played the best game of the season, really, when they beat Dixie on Monday night, but then last night fell by 3 points to Cottonwood. Good news, Snow Canyon girls are playing for the championship. Snow Canyon beat up on Cedar in the semifinals yesterday. So it'll be really the two best teams in girls basketball in 4A, Ridgeline and Snow Canyon, playing for the championship today. That game is at 3 o'clock, and you can listen to it on ESPN Radio. Today, 3 o'clock. Hopefully, Olivia Hamlin and company, Sue Hoskins, the group can bring back the trophy to Southern Utah. Talking with Zach Renstrom today, we're talking water, and Zach, I always like to bring it up, the Graveyard Wash needs a new name. You said you don't care. I know Carrie cares, Carrie Rapke, but is it going to get a new name? Are we not even to that point yet?
No, we're getting really close to that. Well, we're getting close to having things constructed and everything, and like I said, it's just not my... I've got other battles, and so I'd be happy to support a different name. And so it really, I'm trying to think who will be the official people. The permit will be actually owned by St. George City for that. They actually got the right away from that, from the BLM. It was issued to St. George City, even though it's a regional facility. And so it'd probably be St. George. Okay, I'm going to pass the buck here and say that is going to fall upon St. George City Council to name it, even though I don't know if that's the correct way, but I'll pass that buck off to them, and you can call them, Andy, and bug them about naming it.
I have some ideas, Zach. I wrote a few of them down. If you think St. George City, who was a longtime mayor that really was a big part of the development of St. George becoming what it is, Dan MacArthur. How about MacArthur Reservoir?
Yeah.
That wouldn't be bad. Of course, if you... Is it in Santa Clara? I guess it's in St. George City, technically, right?
No, it's in unincorporated county. And so...
Oh, unincorporated. Okay.
Yeah. So now it's...
You know, over in Santa Clara, you could go Hamblin, you know, Reservoir or Esplin Reservoir, one of those, famous Santa Clara names, if you wanted. Could just call it the Santa Clara Reservoir. I don't know.
Well, the Hafen family used to farm in that little
Hafen,
gorge right there. And so, Hafen Reservoir, Rosenberg, reservoir has been kind of teased about a little bit.
I don't think Rick would like that. No, I think he'd be like, no.
Every time it's a joke, and he's like, there's no way. But I think Rosenberg would be a good one. So, yeah, there's a lot of good names out there, and I think it would be fun to name after a family. And so, yeah, call Mayor Randall or somebody on the St. George City Council, and you can lobby them, and whatever they come up with, I'll be glad with.
Okay, I also had Randall Reservoir. Renstrom Reservoir, that has a nice ring to it, Zach.
No.
I'll veto it. Rathje Reservoir.
There you go. You just made her week. She's pretty happy.
Nobody'd be able to spell it or even say it correctly, but at least it would be there.
Well, it'd be that good thing, because then you would know. It's like hurricane, if you pronounce, or Zion. You can always tell when somebody comes on and says, well, I was at Zion. It's like
Lion or Hurricane.
Yeah, you just know they're not locals. And so, yeah, it'd be kind of good to have a local name that only locals could pronounce. That would be fun.
By the way, if you have an idea on what to name the reservoir, really anything but place where they take dead animal or sick animals to die and their bones. We don't want to name it that. So, yeah, if you have a suggestion for a name for the Graveyard Wash reservoir, you can text me at 435-467-5842. All right, so with that one and with the dry wash one, they haven't started construction yet. Do you say that's not actually that far away?
Well, so dry wash, we own the land, and so the only thing that is preventing us to start work on dry wash is we do have to work with the city council over there. They have to approve either a conditional use permit or a zone change. And we are working with the Army Corps of Engineers. There's a question whether they have jurisdiction or not, based on the recent Supreme Court decision. So we are working with the Army Corps of Engineers. But then we're 90% designed. We could start construction on that very fast. On Graveyard, the BLM issued their permit, and we are waiting for the Army Corps of Engineers on that one. That one also, there's a question of jurisdiction. And so... yeah, so I'm very positive about both those, and it'll just be really good to have more storage on that side. Like Gunlock right now, it's been at 100% full. In fact, you promised not to tell anyone, Andy.
I won't tell anybody.
Okay, the Gunlock Falls should be going here pretty soon. We shut off the valve at the bottom of the reservoir just recently, and so yesterday it was about 5 inches from overtopping, but with that valve being shut, it should overtop here pretty soon and start flowing. And so we should have some good waterfalls, especially considering the snowpack. That should go for a while. And so, yeah, you probably want to go up there before the masses of Las Vegas find out about it.
Unfortunately, too, what comes with that is when they flow, our search and rescue folks are going to have to be busy with people who decide they want to jump down there, even though there's a big old giant rock at the bottom and you're going to hurt yourself.
Yeah, I usually like to go out there at the very beginning, because when there's a lot of people out there and I see that, I just know, well, we've had incidences out there, and so I just know it's just a matter of time, and I really wish people would be smarter and not do stupid things, but unfortunately they do, and they, you know, so it's actually managed by Utah State Parks, and they have signs up there, and they have rangers out there, but people still, you know, do things. But they are beautiful. I understand the attraction, but jumping off those cliffs up there, I just don't understand. But so this year for the reservoirs, it's a great year.
I've gotten a few texts on potential names for the Graveyard Wash Reservoir. All right, let me see what you think on these. The first one to text in said the Dixie Spirit Reservoir or Dixie Reservoir.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I like that.
Yeah.
The Washington Reservoir, of course, named after our county and the father of our country. The Greater Zion Reservoir. I don't know if that was sent in tongue-in-cheek or if they were, I don't know. Okay. Someone even said Griffin Reservoir. I do not endorse that.
I like that one.
That'd be a terrible name for a reservoir. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of others coming in right now. We'll get to those. Again, if you've got a name or you think it'd be a good name, better name than the Graveyard Wash Reservoir, which I think it would be hard not to have a better name than that one, you can text me at 435-467-5842 is the text line here for the show.
You know, as we're sitting here talking about this, Andy, I thought of just a great idea. We should have naming rights and basically go out there and say, hey, if you want to name this reservoir, you know, like they do at, you know, sports, like sports facilities, we'll come out there and say, okay, we'll do naming rights, like make a donation or
the
be a sponsor.
Reservoir.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't care if it was called AT&T. Like, if they help pay for the reservoir itself, I'm all good for that.
Yeah.
I don't think Carrie likes that idea. She's like, no.
No.
No. Yeah.
I have a story about naming something. So, and my dad will corroborate the story because it's about him years ago. And we're talking probably about maybe 65 years or 70 years ago. My dad was out at Yellowstone, you know, with all the geysers and everything. And he and his buddy went hiking kind of out in the wilderness there. And they came upon this geyser that apparently nobody really knew about. They had little small geysers all over the park, and they came across this geyser, and there was no name, there was no directions to it. They weren't on a trail; they were just kind of hiking through the woods and stuff. And my dad got the idea. He says, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to construct a little sign." And he got a stick, and he got a piece of cardboard, and he wrote Griffin Geyser on it, and didn't think much of it. Figured, you know, somebody, you know, vandalism, somebody take it down or whatever. He went back years later, like 20 years later, and there was an official metal sign up that said Griffin Geyser on it. And
really?
Yeah, pretty cool.
That is way cool. I'll have to look it up now. That's really cool. Yeah,
Griffin Geyser in Yellowstone. So,
have you been to it?
Rindstrom, I have not, no.
Oh, you have to go to it.
Yeah, I need to. The Rindstrom Reservoir in St. George area.
No, I definitely don't need that. But I got to go to this Griffin Geyser now. That's pretty
Griffin
cool.
Griffin Geyser. Yeah. All right, let's take another quick timeout. When we come back, we'll talk about snowpack, and we'll also get some more results on our ideas for naming the Graveyard Wash Reservoir when we come back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy Griffin, 947 on KDXU. Some other ideas. We're talking to Zach Rindstrom. Zach and I, well, mostly me, I was trying to come up with some names for the better names for the Graveyard Wash Reservoir. And we got quite a few submissions. Appreciate people texting in. Somebody texted said, I like MacArthur Reservoir. I think that's a great name.
Yeah.
Here are some others. Red Rock Reservoir, Black Desert Reservoir, I guess in honor of that new golf course and PGA event. Crimson Reservoir, Color Country Reservoir, Old Dixie Reservoir, kind of
that'd be cool.
Right there by Old Highway 90, Old Dixie Highway 91, right?
Yeah.
And St. George Reservoir, just a simple St. George Reservoir. Those are the names we have. I have had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I have about 15 people that have submitted and potential names for that. And one person just said, anything but Graveyard Watch Reservoir.
That was Carrie that was texting you.
Carrie,
no, it wasn't.
You?
Okay. No. Well, when you have Mayor Randall on your radio, you can bring this subject up and say, hey, Mayor Randall, Zach says it's up to you, so come up with a better name, and I'll support it.
Week from tomorrow, we will pose the question to Michelle Randall. She's on next Thursday, a week from tomorrow. So, and then maybe we can get some kind of official something moving forward and figuring out what that might be.
Okay.
All right, let's talk snowpack, Zach. How are we looking snowpack? I asked the question, you know, a couple of minutes ago, is the drought over? And I guess officially no, right?
Yeah. So right now it's kind of interesting. We're a really good place. So our snowpack is essentially 100%, and it looks like we have a couple more storms coming in. So we're looking at like we're going to have a really good snowpack. Our reservoirs are all full. They're doing really well. Why they're still classifying us in a drought. Now, it's not an extreme drought. It's a minor drought. And the reason why is because the groundwater has not basically come back to where we want to see it. And so that's, of course, all that groundwater that we pump out of during those hot, drier times, it just takes time for that to get recharged. And so last year was a good year. This year's a good year. But that's why they just don't say we're out. We're in a really good place, though. Like, I don't want to say we're in a huge, really bad drought like we were a couple of years ago, because we are looking a lot better. But that's the only limitation for us just being completely out is the groundwater. Just we need a couple more of these winters just to really saturate the ground to get that groundwater recharge.
Now, we would be remiss when we're talking about climate to totally dismiss past patterns.
Yes.
I know a lot of people, especially down when I was down in Texas, a lot of people put a lot of stock in the old Farmer's Almanac or the Farmer's Almanac. But a lot of that is based in science, based on what's happened in the past and trying to predict the future based on patterns and what's happened in the past. Of course, you factor that in with modern meteorology and you know, we're men of science here and everything back. But does it appear to you that the drought pattern is over and we're in a wet pattern perhaps for the next few years?
Boy, I sure hope to. I really, really hope so. So, I mean, the last 2 years, I mean, last year was just phenomenal. This year is just dead average right now. And so it hasn't been like way over, but we'll take average any time. So this is 2 years in a row. I'm hopeful that this pattern continues for, you know, 5, 10 more, 20 years. When we do look at the Colorado River as a whole and look at those tree rings, there's clearly patterns. And so it'll be dry for multiple years and then it'll get wet for multiple years. And so there is that variation that occurs. And so, you know, I'll probably be in this job for the next 15 years. And if we could be in a wetter period for the next 15 years, I'd be happy. But I can't predict the future.
You may be answering questions 5 years, 10 years from now from a different host, because I hope to be retired in that amount of time, at least in the 10-year part of it, about the drought and what are you doing? How are we going to supply enough water for all these homes and things like that? And I guess you just have to, you know, you're like a ball player. You got to field the ball whenever it comes to you. You just never know.
Yeah, we're all dealt a certain cards, and you just play the cards you've been dealt. And so we'll do whatever that is. But we are planning. We spent a lot of time planning, and a lot of people ask me, you know, what are you planning for? And I always say, I am planning for a huge flood this year. So I'm assuming we're just going to get a massive snowpack. There's going to be rain on that snow. We're going to have this big major flood, and we're going to have that. At the same time, I'm planning that basically these storms are just going to shut down. We're going to go 150 days, 200 days without any measurable rainfall and go right in that. And so I have to plan for these extremes to happen. I mean, because we just have to be prepared for those options. Like right now, we spend a lot of time planning for like cyber attacks. I hope it never happens. I really do. But we have to plan for those extremes so we're prepared for them.
Well, they had that outage, speaking of that kind of thing, they had that outage at AT&T a few days ago.
Oh, yeah.
They still haven't gotten to the bottom of what caused that outage. And AT&T says it was, you know, there was some maybe technical problems and other people, or, you know, more nefarious reasons. Maybe it was a cyber attack or who knows. But I know I got a notification. AT&T is my carrier. I got a notification. They're going to give me $5 back. Woohoo! Oh. You know, for the outage. But we hope it never happens. But you have to prepare for the worst. And that really is, I mean, you go job description, water conservancy president, you know, your job, Zach, is you got to prepare for both scenarios. And that, I think, can be a little sobering, right? I mean, that's something you have to deal with on a daily basis, knowing that you got to be ready for whatever.
Yeah, and we spend a lot of time preparing for these events. And so, like, with the cyber stuff, right now, I feel very confident that if we had one of those, we could immediately operate our plants and everything completely without computers. We'd have to go and hand turn valves and do all that, but our staff is trained to that level that we could do it. Other areas in the country, I don't know if they could do that because it's so automated, but I know at least here locally we could do that.
So. That's almost bad, because that means all those areas that it wouldn't work, they would come here. I don't want them here.
They're coming here anyways. So
yeah, you're right. We kind of saw that with COVID, where a lot of places were shut down, and thankfully our leaders here locally were smart enough to realize that we don't need to shut everything down.
No.
Of course, then everyone, Nevada and California and Arizona and wherever, started realizing, hey, St. George is open.
Yeah, it's a great place to live, and they stayed.
All right, Warner Valley Reservoir, is that on hold? Is there a pin in it? I know you're still trying to go forward on it. What's the status?
So the status on that, the is that one's a few years off. And I can't, it's so far off, I couldn't say, oh, we're going to do it in 5 or 10 years because it's a little ways off. What we're doing right now is we're acquiring the land for that. And so the BLM came to the water district, and the BLM is required by Congress to acquire some critical habitat for the tortoises. So we're kind of doing a three-way swap. So we're going to go buy a bunch of that tortoise land and then swap BLM for that going forth. And so that way we're securing that land. We know we have the land. And then when the demand requires, we can construct it without necessarily going through all the complete process that we've had to in the past. And so it's just more of a timing issue of, you know, when demand requires it, we would build it. You know, if just the fact of owning that land and having the control over that land will be a huge, huge hurdle that will make it possible in the future.
We could probably get into a whole discussion, not necessarily your area, your purview, but why does BLM own so much of our land anyway in this area? And why do we have to do land swaps when, well, like I said, that's a whole different discussion for another day.
I could go off on that subject for a while. And
Now, Kara, your PR person right now is going, don't you say a word about this. This is not, stay out of this.
Yeah. Well, yeah. She is. And, you know, my job is water. My job is not to be a political pundit. So,
yeah.
But in my current job,
that's my job, actually.
I will be happy to describe to anybody about how our environmental process is completely broken in this country. And it's sad, but it is.
It is. All right. We are short on time. And maybe if you'll talk a little bit again about the swapping out grass that, you know, drinks a lot of water for other materials, what the rebate program is all about. Tell us a little bit more about that before we go today.
Sure. So right now the water district will pay $2 a square foot to have a landscape conversion. So it's just not ripping out grass. You have to convert it to other desert-friendly landscaping. But it can be artificial grass if that's something you want to look into. It's fairly simple. They can just go to our website. It's wcwcd.org. They go, they fill out some stuff online. We'll send an individual out there. They'll measure your grass, get some more information from you. Then after you've completed the conversion, we come out, we measure it again. And if it looks good, we'll send you a check. And so last year we paid out over $2 million in grass conversion or landscape conversion. So we have a lot of interest, but we do have funds for it. The state has been... they say, hey, we'll have, they're so impressed with what they're doing, they'll make sure we'll continue to get those funds. And so if somebody's looking at that project, especially in the spring before your grass really starts taking off, this would be a really good time to look at landscape conversion. And there's some landscape companies that are kind of starting to specialize in this area a little bit more because there's so much of a demand for it. And so it would be a good time to start taking advantage of these programs that we have going.
There's a cap, right, on how much money you can get back?
Yeah, there's a cap and a limit, and so we pay $2 up to a certain amount, and then it goes to $1, and then there's a certain amount of cap. But even with that cap, if you're in a homeowner association where they want to remove over that cap, we have been very creative in working with those homeowner associations about how we can help get additional funds to them, or if you're a big organization that has a lot, we can work with you individually.
That's so cool. And again, you know, Zach hasn't mentioned it, but I will. And I know Zach would agree. Southern Utahns have been so great about responding to these needs. You know, you say, hey, we need to conserve water, and people cut back. And, hey, we need to swap out grass. People are swapping out grass. It's been awesome.
You know, what's interesting is the people that do swap out their grass, it's when we ask them why, the big reason why people are doing it is they just don't want to maintain the grass anymore. They either don't want to pay for someone to mow it every week, or they're just looking at saying, hey, I just don't want to mow this thing anymore. And a well-designed xeriscape landscaping is less maintenance. And that's a huge reason why a lot of people are choosing to go away from it also. So there's a lot of really good reasons to do that landscape swap.
My son, who lives here in northern Utah, that's actually his number one reason. He just bought a house. They just moved in, has a gigantic backyard, and he said, man, you know how long and how much time and effort and money I would spend in mowing this thing if that's what I choose to do. And he says, he's actually going to put in some kind of ground cover. Not sure what he's going to do yet, but he's going to put some kind of ground cover that doesn't require all that maintenance.
Yeah, it's a lot.
He's Zach Renstrom. Zach, thanks so much for coming on today and informing us on all things water and helping us try to figure out what the new name should be for the Graveyard Wash Reservoir. You're always welcome on the show, and appreciate you coming in.
Hey, thanks a lot. Travel safely.
Back tomorrow on the Andy Griffin Show. Thank you so much for listening.